Welcome to episode 11 of Your Hearth at Home. My name is Tara and I am so grateful that you are here. Today I am excited to be speaking with Emma Hill Lewis, a lifestyle coach based outside of Byron Bay in Australia. Emma is truly the embodiment of a lifestyle coach. In our conversation, she touches on so many topics from nutrition to your body's toxic load to alignment, pattern interruption, mindfulness, decluttering, and more. She talks about her work with mothers having undergone this transition and identity shift herself, as well as talking about growth within a relationship and observing the ripple effect that one's own healing has on each person that they touch. Emma shares her wealth of knowledge based on her personal experience and formal training in neuro-linguistic programming and hypnotherapy. I am so very grateful for the opportunity to connect you to Emma's breadth of knowledge and lived experience. I hope that you enjoy. Welcome back to Your Hearth at Home. I am so very grateful to be here today with Emma Hill Lewis. She is based close to Byron Bay, Australia. She is a women's lifestyle coach. I am so grateful to have you here. Thank you for being in this space.
No, hi, Tara. Thanks for having me. So great to speak to you.
Oh, and you. Thank you. I'm really excited to speak with you about this topic today. Just to delve into, you know, what lifestyle coaching entails and what kinds of themes that you work with. And I would love to hear a bit of context about your journey and how you came to this space of being a lifestyle coach. Perhaps you can just dive in and share a little bit about how you've come to where you are.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. My story probably starts back when I was in the corporate world. So I spent 12 or 13 years or so in the corporate world, climbing the corporate ladder. We lived in the city. Life was pretty good. We were earning decent money. We had a nice big house. But some part of me just didn't feel right. We just had our first child and I'd gone back to work and I just felt different. And I think that's a catalyst for a lot of women is having a child, but a catalyst could be anything for anybody. But for me, it was, we had our first child. I went back to work and for some reason, everything in the workplace just wasn't gelling with me anymore. And I just found my priorities weren't in alignment with business like they used to be. So for me, I guess, there's a lot of deep conversations that my husband and I had to have as to what we wanted for our life and what we wanted for our kids. And we often holidayed a few hours down the coast from us in a small town. And I'd always said that I'd love to live there. So we had talked about much later in life, retiring down to where we happen to be now. And in the end, we just made the decision to do it then. Like, what was stopping us? My husband didn't love his job. And I was really conflicted about spending the time away from, if I'm going to be away from my child, then I want to be doing something that is actually filling me up and that I'm passionate about, that's worth that, spending that time away from my child. So we made the move when I was pregnant with our second child. And at first I had to keep commuting for work for a little while. And, it was a pretty tough transition. My husband was looking for work and there's obviously less work in coastal sort of towns. So we live just inland of, Byron Bay, which is, I'm pretty sure some of your listeners would have heard of it because it's a pretty popular surf destination in Australia. And we are fortunate enough now that we bought a farm that's just inland from there. So we live in the hinterland. We've got 10 acres, which is just beautiful. We made the call just to do it then rather than wait till we retired. It felt like the right choice. We just had to kind of listen to our intuition and say, this is what we need to do for us and for our family. So that's when we moved. So that was about 4 years ago, I think it was. And we since had our second child. So we now have two little girls. We live on this farm. We've got chickens and we've had goats and horses and that sort of thing. So it's a big, pretty big transition from I would have called myself a city girl to becoming somewhat of a farmer. I wouldn't say I'm still probably a hobby farmer more than anything. And if I'm honest, my husband does the hard work out on the farm. But yeah, so part of that transition, not only just becoming a mum, but also transitioning to a small community and, you know, just basically having to flip everything I'd known in my life on its head. So I was no longer the breadwinner. I was no longer working. I was a stay-at-home mum mostly. And for me, that was quite hard. And what it did for me was bring up a lot of probably, I would say, negative emotions or like limiting beliefs about what I was capable of. Or it just made me really dive really deep into myself and the kind of parent I was and the kind of, you know, experience or the learnings I'd had through my life. And how I wanted to, I suppose, how I wanted to be better at that. So I think with a lot of mums, if you've got a few mums in your audience, they'll be able to relate. Once you have kids, you your identity shifts. You no longer are able to focus on yourself. Your energy goes into your children. And so from that, you can often lose yourself and lose your purpose. So I had dipped in and out of the health industry. In a capacity of like studying and interest and reading books and that sort of thing for the best part of over a decade. And I was drawn to it. So even though my logical mind was saying, go and get a job and, you know, for a couple of days a week and put the kids in care because for a couple of days a week, because that's what I'd done before, I kept thinking, no, I'm not going to do that until I've got something that I want to do. So at some point I had to make a decision to balance for myself, and I did put the kids in care for 2 days a week just so I could kickstart what I wanted to do. So I did a lot of deep diving. I went and studied neuro-linguistic programming and hypnotherapy, and I've continued some study in health coaching. And yeah, so from there then it just made sense for me that all the things I'd learned, I wanted to be able to pass them on to everybody else, because my transformation in the last few years has been just, I can't even put words to it, it's a bit transformational. So it's been phenomenal change. So I think what I've done is I've unearthed all the things that, all my passions and all my interests and all my knowledge, everything that I've had inside me from my life of experience. And I've been able to convert them into what is now my job. So it doesn't even feel like a job. I love doing it. So, which makes me feel comfortable then putting my kids in care for a few days, is I'm doing it for a greater good, for something larger than myself. It's giving them some balance in having a few days of social interaction. And for me, it gives me that headspace that I need, which is so important for a mum. Obviously, isolation comes along and flips things a little bit again. So I've had the kids home full time now for, we started early with our isolation, so since early March. So it's been basically 24/7 for 7 days a week, because my husband's been working quite a lot too. So that's changed things again and come up with challenges again. And I can imagine a lot of mums who are homeschooling their kids, it's been hectic. So a lot of people with our kids were like, this is amazing, this is a great break. Or ones with older kids, you know, have had this as a beautiful break in life, which is so rare to have, just to be able to sort of almost tune out of life for a while. Others have been on the front line, you know, going nuts. And I think mums at home have been somewhere in the middle, because having your kids at home and trying to homeschool them, I know for my friends, thankfully my kids are a little bit younger, so I haven't had to really homeschool as such, like rigid homeschooling. I know so many people that have been really struggling with that, and I think a lot of people are very grateful for teachers now. So yeah, that's basically the story. And I don't know, is there anything else, anything you wanted to hear that I've left out?
Well, I'm curious, is what your career was before this transition in any way related to health or lifestyle or anything like that?
No, absolutely not. I worked for 12 years in the oil and gas business. So very, very unrelated, if anything, almost polar opposite. Because now I focus a lot on sustainability and living a low toxic life and that sort of thing. So quite the opposite. And quite honestly, we're at the moment, our society needs oil and gas to sustain the way we want to live, but it's not something I would choose to work in. And I think for me, I actually sought counseling when I first started working in the industry, because I did feel a bit morally not against it, but I just felt, for me, it was not my calling. So I actually sought counseling initially, but I kind of didn't listen to my intuition back then. I was much younger, and I think I was about 20, 21 when I first went into the industry. So I kept plowing ahead. I kept doing everything that everybody feels like they need to do, just to pay the bills and to appear like everybody else. But that inner voice, that inner knowing, kept telling me that it wasn't for me. So I had to eventually listen, which was good.
And would you suggest that, just based on the timeline of your story, that the birth of your first daughter may have put you in better tune with that inner voice?
Yeah, definitely. Similar to this isolation period, because I had obviously had time off after having my baby. And so not only are you sort of immersed in the childlike wonder of children, but having that time off where I didn't have a schedule, I didn't have other than going for coffee dates and walks with my other mum friends, I didn't really have plans. I didn't have just it was this freedom and this feeling of finally being able to listen to my thoughts. Because I think before that, for whatever reasons, I just shoved my thoughts down. Like, it was just, you just ignored that voice. And I think particularly for women, we are supposed to be in that creative zone. We're supposed to be in flow. We're supposed to be nurturing. We're supposed to sort of be able to, supposed to is not the right word either, but like, we want to be able to connect with that part of us, because that's where we birth things from, where that's where our creativity comes from. So I had not been in my feminine essence ever, I wonder, since I was a child. So I think finally tapping into that as being a mother sort of forced me to listen to that. Then I realized my potential outside of what I was always thought was the box. And I did always feel like a like I didn't quite fit in the box, but I was shoving myself in there anyway, just because that's what I thought I was supposed to do. Whereas tapping back into the feminine energy, and having that time, having white space, and actually thinking about things that come up and dealing with things that come up rather than just shoving them down, I think was a real catalyst for me realizing that I needed something different.
So how coming from this realization of wanting something different, what was kind of, if you had one particular or a few particular ins into creating perhaps this white space or to accessing that inner voice, did you have particular modalities that you used, or was it through your NLP training that you were able to access this? Kind of what was your in to that new track?
Great question. So funnily enough, NLP and hypnotherapy were the last things on my journey, actually. And they just really helped cement things for me. So for me, the initial things I started to do were mindfulness and decluttering. So they're the two things that I really am quite passionate about, and I talk to a lot of people about. So initially I started with mindfulness, because when somebody first said to me, maybe you should meditate, I just scoffed. I thought to myself, there's no way. Like, my mind was always busy. And still is. It's the natural way of my brain. But the thought of sitting still and not thinking about anything, to me, was just really intimidating. And at first I thought there was no way I could do that. So I started doing mindfulness. So somebody explained it to me, like, you know, just finding minutes in your day where you can just breathe and be present. And I really liked that. And with a baby, that was something that was really easy to do, because there are a lot of minutes with a baby where you're sitting there either feeding them or trying to put them to sleep, and you're just sitting, really. So tapping into that. So, you know, I'd just sit there with my cup of tea and watch the steam rise out of it, or I'd look out the window and watch the wind move through the trees, or I would just sit still and just listen to sounds around me, you know, sounds in the house or whatever it might be. Or I just go for a walk and I would, you know, just really stop and look at the flowers, you know, just those really simple things that even those sounded a bit funny to me at first, but I just started naturally opening my mind to what it meant to slow down and be present. I think being present was the big thing, and being more intentional. I didn't call it intentional back then, but that was, I can see now that that was me trying to be more intentional about what I was doing with my life, where I'd been on autopilot for my life up until that point. And I suppose I had some other reason greater than myself to do it for, which was my baby. So I guess, you know, and now I've got, you know, I've got the kids, but I've also got, you know, something I'm working on that is greater than myself. And that gives me that daily motivation to stay in tune and in touch as well and be intentional. So I think you can find it in any capacity, not necessarily even in your kids. And I think everybody I've spoken to that has sort of started going down a path of either changing their lifestyle or just becoming more aware or becoming more intentional or personal development, whatever sort of path they're on, there's generally been some sort of catalyst. So they might have had a car accident, they might have someone might have died that was close to them, you know, there's generally something, like a health crisis, you know, maybe they ended up in hospital, chronic illness, you know, that sort of thing. Comes a point where they're basically their level of tolerance or satiation, is that the word? I can never say that word. Satiation for their problem or for what's going on in their life hits a threshold where they no longer, or the pain is worse than the discomfort of actually digging further into where they're at in their life. So for me, I'd hit that point once I had a baby and all these things came up, you know, anything from your childhood. Once you have a kid, once you have your own child, you all of a sudden see all the things from your own childhood start to come up, which is funnily enough, because that's your experience of parenting, right, is the way you were parented. And I recognized very quickly that the way my parents parented me, although nothing inherently wrong with that, was not the way I wanted to parent. So I quickly knew I needed to make some changes. So I had to really tap into myself to find those. So yeah, I started with mindfulness. And then when we moved house, decluttering was my next thing. So we moved from a bigger house to a smaller house. And I just recognized in the move that we had so much stuff. And I think prior to me being more intentional in my life, I thought that the stuff was important. I thought perhaps it made me happy. And maybe when I bought it, maybe I did have some enjoyment. But then I quickly realized as I started selling things and giving things to charity and going through the decluttering process, I quickly recognized that these things don't have value like I thought they did. You know, I was putting a lot of value on things and a lot of memories into things when the memories are actually in my mind or in the people. And the value is most definitely in the people, not in the things. So I did a lot of listening to some podcasts and a lot of reading about minimalism. And so between that and the mindfulness, I sort of started to really open my mind up to the fact that there was a different way of living out there. So I dug into environmentally friendly products around the home. You know, we live basically a toxic free home. And obviously living on a farm, you know, we try not to do anything as far as chemicals go out on the few sort of fruit trees and things that we have. So that in itself was a shift, and I started to notice the health benefits for me. I'd suffered most of my life with chronic ill health, like, you know, I don't know whether you call it the same in Canada, but like irritable bowel syndrome and skin issues and moods and headaches and anxiety and undiagnosed depression. I had all of that, you know, prior to making these changes. So as I slowed down and as I allowed myself the white space to start tapping into myself, all of that stuff started to come to the surface. And I recognized how deeply tied together my health was with my mental state. So all of this started to unravel. And from there, then I obviously started trying different things. So, you know, I tried doing, you know, just self-love activities, affirmations. I finally jumped into meditation. So for me, that started off, for anyone that's like me that, you know, initially struggled with the thought of meditation, I started off with short guided meditations and then went from that to longer ones. And then now I can, you know, meditate with music, or, you know, I can do silent meditation. I probably don't last as long. But I can do all of those forms of meditation now. Like, I can tap in a lot easier. I've delved into breath work, which is beautiful. And I do love breath work. I've tried a bit of everything now, really, like just finding the things, or exercise, obviously yoga, tapping into those things that sort of filled me up, and I felt like it re-energized me and top up my battery. Because whilst I'm not in the corporate world and I'm not surrounded by that energy anymore, I've got my kids, you know, and the energy and my husband, and making sure that I'm still showing up for them. So it's important to keep that battery full, you know, for everybody around me.
Please pardon the interruption in this wonderful podcast episode. I'd like to take a moment to share with you the opportunity to be in community and supported in your at-home practice of self-love. I invite you to join the Sacred Circle Collective. This is a group of like-hearted people who gather at each quarter moon to complete a practice, whether that be meditation, movement, breathwork, or any of the other fun stuff that we get up to in the space. This collective is about setting aside 1 hour each week to invest in yourself. If you are listening to this podcast episode, then I believe that you are conscious, curious, and open to practicing self-love. Click the link in the show notes for further information and to claim your first month free. That's all replays, 4 live practices, and the chance to be in this community at no charge with no obligation. I am so grateful and excited to share this space with you, and I can't wait to see you in there. And now, back to the podcast. On that note, I'm curious, because just the radical shift that has happened, and you've been in relationship the whole time.
Mm.
And you spoke at the beginning about how you had this deep discussions with your partner about how, like, you know, the values and how you guys were going to make things continue to work. And I'm curious about communication with those around you, as like those around someone who is endeavoring to make some of these changes, put in place some of these new practices. Do you have any tips or thoughts about effective communication with those in your sphere?
It's funny that you bring that up, because yeah, that's a regular challenge for anybody, especially when people are going through radical change, or especially during times like this in isolation that we've just had, where things have really shifted and there's been a lot of uncertainty. Uncertainty brings up a lot of fears, so it can bring out the worst in people. So there's definitely, you know, there's definitely room for more communication in every relationship. I don't care how good you think your relationship is, there's always space for more of that. So, and I'm so interested in this, I'm actually going off to study relationship coaching next year as well. That's my plan, because it's amazing how, you know, your relationships really do have a I'm not going to say they dictate your life, but they do definitely, or they're a leading indicator, I suppose, of how your life is going. So if your relationships are in a good position, then your life is in a good position. So how you do one thing is how you do everything. So basically, for me, I can see that how over the last decade, I've been with my husband now a decade. So when he met me, I was actually delving into health at the time, but I just stepped into a new role in the corporate space. So at some point, my passions fell to the side again as I pursued the corporate side of things. So he saw the very busy, probably a lot more serious, very sort of more masculine version of me for a long time. And actually for a long time, I was the breadwinner, which was, I suppose, is untraditional in a lot of relationships, although probably more common these days. And then, in me starting to feel like I was not in alignment and all of my health issues that were going on, I really, that calling to sort of really unearth that feeling and to just sort of step into the unknown a bit and make that change brought up a lot, you know, and it did for him as well. You know, like any sort of change can be quite frightening, but I think both of us realized we weren't tied to our city life, and he'd spent a lot of time on farms in South Africa as a child. So he was open to living on a farm again and like just making a change. And I think he felt, once I brought it up and once I kind of dealt with my emotion of it, then he went through his emotion of it. And then funnily enough, then once we moved, then I went through my emotion again of like, oh, have we done the right thing? You know? And so it's just, it's almost a bit of turn taking in those stressful times. Then ever since the, you know, obviously then we've had the two kids, and, you know, I've obviously been doing a lot of personal growth, and to a point my husband's not that interested in all of the process and all of the stuff I've been through. So there's been a little bit of that communication issue come back up in the past couple of years. Because only recently we've had some really deep and profound discussions about connection and maintaining that connection, and that communication is really the only way to do it. So what we've found is that whenever we bury things, whenever we sort of or just brush things under the carpet and we let them build up, tends to be when things sort of explode and people come out and say things that are not really coming from the heart. They're coming from this place of resentment or frustration or whatever it might be. So one of the things I've learned with neurolinguistic programming is obviously being more consciously aware of your emotions and your emotional state. So doing all the things like mindfulness for me helped me try and recognize where I am. And look, it's not perfect. I don't think anyone's got this sort of stuff nailed where you can constantly be monitoring your emotions and handling anything that gets thrown at you. I'm definitely in a lot better place than my husband is also. And I think that's just come purely from my change in mindset, and not me telling it to him or preaching it to him, but him just seeing the change in me and me being able to, I suppose, speak differently when I approach him about things. I'm not coming at him like a crazed woman with a whole bunch of anger and resentment behind her. I'm coming with love to every conversation, and he is then doing it as well. I would dare say he's actually better than me at it. Like naturally he seems to be really open and loving now that that's the kind of space we have created for each other. So, you know, that's been beautiful for us. And just to see that even through stressful periods like isolation or moving house or finding jobs, losing jobs, you know, all of that sort of stuff and having kids, that we are still able to find that connection. And it would have been very easy for us, you know, since having the kids to have let that totally go. And my husband says he attributes that to me constantly seeking, I suppose it's that knowing again, it's that constant seeking for me to make things the best they can be. And, you know, in my past life in the corporate world, that was me trying to climb a corporate ladder. in my current life, that's me trying to make sure that our life is as good as it can be. So it's a focus on our lifestyle. It's a focus on the relationships. It's a focus on being present, you know, enjoying life, having fun, that sort of thing. And look, like I said, it's never perfect. You know, I go through phases. So, you know, when I started my business as a lifestyle coach, there's a lot of stress that came along with that as well. And I spent a lot of time trying to get the business going and working on my branding and all that sort of stuff. And there was a certain level of stress that came in then. And, you know, I found myself diving back into some of that. For me, I call it like my significance driven. So like my fear driven behavior, like a behavior that's more about success and, you know, that sort of thing. Some of us are born with this sort of, well, we all have six human needs, and I won't go into those, but you can be born with a natural state. And for me, the natural state was to strive, rather than thrive. So sometimes I can fall back into that pattern of strive. So no matter how much work you've done on yourself, you may find that new patterns come up when new challenges come along. So I guess that's been, yeah, for me, is whenever we have a new challenge, is finding what the new normal is for that sort of challenge for us. So I think you asked me more about the relationships and the communication. So I just want to make sure I've answered your question. What else? Finding time. So a couple of the things we did were like, for a while there when we were both fairly busy and the kids were young and we weren't finding the time during the day to connect, we set ourselves a weekly meeting, basically, which is, you know, for anybody that likes a bit of structure in their lives, it was a good thing for us. So particularly for my husband, rather than when he got home each day, me to come out with him with 100 questions or tell him a bunch of things, it was like anything that needed to be resolved, anything that was, you know, financial decisions or things like that, I saved it to our meeting, our weekly meeting. So that enabled him to come to that space and be like, okay, I'm ready to discuss something important. I had to also make it clear to him, we call it the Meadow Report. So, you know, men, if you're in a heterosexual relationship, you know, men and women think very differently. I think we all know that. And women, often we speak just to be heard and just to kind of get the words out, just to kind of chew things over. Men like to solve problems. So one of the things that I found was when I was trying to talk to my husband about things, he wanted to have a solution, which would then get me a bit frustrated because I was feeling like I wasn't being heard. And then for him, then I'd get frustrated. So then he'd be getting frustrated back at me like, well, you were telling me all this stuff. I'm just trying to fix it. So once I coined it with calling it the Meadow Report, and we talked about how sometimes I just need to download what's going on through the day, my thoughts about things, where things are at, some of the decisions that I'm making, anything like that. Once we talked about that and we worked out that was the Meadow Report. At first it was like he'd say, is this the Meadow Report? And I'd be like, yeah, this is the Meadow Report. but now we're kind of, he knows now that when I'm just talking basically at him, that he doesn't need to have a solution. All he needs to do is listen. And, you know, some days I have to remind him that listening isn't him just going, yes, yes, yes. Sometimes it is like he can ask me a question or, you know, he can behave like a normal person and not a robot when I'm doing that. But, you know, it has taken us to communicate back and forward to kind of work out what works for both of us so that we can both have our needs fulfilled. Because we both have very different human needs. And I think sometimes in a relationship, the most important thing is that awareness of each individual person and what their needs are. And, you know, in a relationship, we should want to meet that other person's needs. So we spend a lot of time now just making sure that we are communicating and that both of our buckets are filled up. And even having like a little rating system, like some days, you know, my husband would be like, how's your day? and I might go off on a rant, on a tangent or something. Whereas we sort of start, like some days now, I'll be like, oh, I'm just like a 3 out of 10 today. Just a 3 out of 10. It's been a rough day. Or, you know, I'm a 7 out of 10. I'm feeling really good today. Just, you know, just some way of communicating it that's makes it really clear of how we're feeling so that we can both tap into each other. Because, you know, after being in an office all day, the last thing he needs is to come home and be like bombarded with information or with a situation with the kids that's out of control. I mean, you know, you can't always control everything, but, you know, we try to sort of tap in and go, okay, well, where are we both at? Who's going to kind of run with the different duties? So, you know, there's obviously the making of the dinner and the bathing the kids and all that sort of stuff in the evening. We've sort of, we just listen to each other, you know. If one person says, oh, I need 20 minutes to go and, I don't know, have a shower or just go and lay down for a bit or something like that, while the other person picks up the slack. And it's just this sort of, rather than I think originally it might have been a bit more of, you know, not tallying, but, you know, like, oh, well, I did it last night, so it's your turn tonight. Like, I think initially with young kids, that's, sometimes it can be like that because both parents are under different pressures. For us, it definitely did feel like that for a while, and we've shifted it now into a bit more of a, how are you feeling? How am I feeling? Okay, well, I'm happy to run with X, Y, and Z tonight, and you can run with that. And then, of course, you know, different energy shifts, and we take turns to do different things. So I think that's all in communication. Like, that's all come about with us having continually talking and wanting to improve the way we communicate. And a lot of that comes down to us is also setting a great example for our kids, because our relationship is either going to be a warning or an example to them. So we want it to be a good example.
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful. A warning or an example. Love that. And it's really beautiful to just hear how your journey has played such, like your personal journey has played such a profound role on your family, right? Like, as you speak, I can see the ripples of just your personal development. And yeah, maybe you've gone beyond the space where your husband wants to pursue, but still the work that you do, coming to him with love, him receiving the love, coming to you with love, it just makes everything work better.
Absolutely.
Like, and that's really profound. Lovely.
Yeah, and it's really profound how even relationships outside of your partner, like with your family. So our family are our biggest triggers, right? So everything, as everybody knows, at Christmas time, everybody fights, right? It's just like you're around your family. They are the people that know you the best. Well, maybe they do, or they think they do at least. But they're also the people that mirror parts of you the most. So when we're around our family, quite often we're triggered. So we're often in a heightened emotional state. So you can imagine that everyone together at Christmas, everyone's in a heightened emotional state. Everyone's exhausted from the year. Christmas is a great time for everyone to have a Barney. we call it a Barney in Australia. I don't know what you call it. Have a fight, have a disagreement. So interestingly, approaching family with love as well, and being able to come into any space with like more in control of my own emotions, and also just willingness to be open and be loving and acceptance. And I lost my train of thought. There was something else I was thinking there. Oh, and just leading by example. So basically, you know, if you are calm, then you'll find that people mirror you. So I try and stay as calm as I can around my family now, with anybody really. I try and stay calm and try and be level-headed. I try and make sure I'm doing my mindfulness. And, you know, then, you know, around family more than ever, or when you're in a foreign environment with family, even more so, it's most important to be still doing your rituals, your daily rituals, and that mindfulness and tapping in or doing your meditation, whatever you need to do. Because then, like, we've all got a threshold, right, where we sort of get to the point where things like anxiety or you know, general stress will start to trigger things in us. So keeping that threshold down, just keeping that awareness of self all the time is really important. And like I said, it's not perfect. Like, there's going to be times that when you can't do it, or when, you know, you're exhausted and you haven't recognized your battery's flat and you need to recharge, and you might not be able to do it all the time. But I think the intention, and that's what I love about the word intention, is everything for me is now a lot more intentional. My intention is to always show up to be the best version I can be, to be more calm, to be that example for everyone around me. And, you know, I think overall that starts, and you know, knowing a bit about neuroscience, the more often you think something, the more often you do it, the more it becomes like any habit, it then becomes part of your psyche and part of your behavior. So I think over time you can just evolve to get better and better at being a better version of you, a calmer version of you, and help everyone around you at the same time. And that comes in with decluttering. So let me touch on decluttering again. The biggest mistake people make in decluttering is trying to get everyone else around them to declutter as well. Mm. So telling somebody to get rid of their stuff is like walking up to somebody and saying, you've got a problem, you need to fix it. Nobody likes being told what to do. Nobody. Not a person on the planet. Little kids, you know, like down to as little as they can basically think for themselves. Nobody likes being told what to do. So, you know, that's probably a very similar example to turning up with your family and just trying to lead by example. Same thing with when you declutter your home, it's just leading by example. And eventually people around you will see how much easier life is when you've got less stuff around you as well, how much less cleaning you've got to do, and all the benefits, you know, less decision fatigue when you open your wardrobe, all that sort of stuff. And they will just start to follow your lead anyway, funnily enough. So yeah, that's a big thing. You can't try and change anybody else. They've got to want to change themselves.
Yes. And something that we run into so often as people who want to be of service, that want to help, that want to, like, I mean, speaking to mothers, this natural wanting to nurture and to, you know, be of service. And just that piece about leading by example is so beautiful, because everything in its time. When someone's ready, then they know who to come to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and people respond better if you come at them with, you know, I've just done it. Like, and this happens a lot in the self-development space. You know, when people go off and they start to learn something new, they want everyone to do it too, because they know how good it's been for them. That people will only take things on when their subconscious mind is ready to learn that. So you can't force anybody down the path you're on. We're all on a different journey. And the best thing you can do is just lead by example. Same with kids. Kids don't do what you tell them to do. They do what you do. Mm. So, which, you know, I've been learning at different times in our lives when we've been more busy, you know, and we're on our phones, and they tend to want to be on, you know, like a tablet or on the TV more often. It's just the same for us as it's addictive. It's very addictive for kids as well. So then we've got to break those cycles. But it's just all about awareness and recognition, and then, because you can't change anything unless you're aware of it, right? So you've got to know those things that you don't know before you can start to say, okay, well, I want to do something different here, and then make those changes.
Yeah. And I feel like that awareness piece kind of speaks to what you were talking about earlier, where it's like you just start to be more calm, and you're leading by example. For those times where, you know, especially in the beginning, where one is cultivating the awareness and they perhaps still reach that point of overwhelm, do you have any recommendations for how to manage in that space where you have hit that upper limit? How to manage that and come back into, you know, a space of peace, perhaps.
Yeah. Wow. I feel like I'm an expert in that. My automatic used to be to explode. I was never very aware of my stress levels, and all it took was for my eldest daughter, when she was little, so before I went further and further into this, was for something to kind of go a bit wrong, or for her to scream for an extensive period of time or whatever, and I was over my threshold. It didn't take much. So for me, there's quite a few things I've done for that. So obviously breathing is a great one, and people tell you to take 7 deep breaths. For me, I used to do square breathing. So have you heard of it? You're nodding. It's like 4 breaths in, so in the shape of a square, 4 breaths in, you go up, hold it for 4 breaths, or 4 seconds out, I should say, and then 4 across. So I probably didn't explain that very well. So yeah, you breathe in for 4, like 2, 3, 4, hold, 2, 3, 4, out, 2, 3, 4, hold, 2, 3, 4, like that. And I just picture the square as I'm doing it. So it gives you something to focus on if you're a visual kind of person, as well as then obviously the breathing is that more kinesthetic side of things. So that's always a good one. And I do basically anything that you do to try and interrupt the pattern that you're playing out, because all of us have a pattern or a strategy that we use to deal with stress. So that for me, it used to be, I'd get to a point and I'd just start yelling. So basically you can see that as a pattern, something that you do whenever you are feeling that stress or whenever you've gone over your threshold. And I do anything that you do to break that is called a pattern interrupt. So there's a few key pattern interrupts that I used. Initially when I first started learning about this sort of thing to manage my anxiety, somebody told me to do like a power pose, which I've kind of, you know, adapted since then. But initially she was like, you know, put your legs, put your feet shoulder width apart, you know, put your hands out in front of you in some sort of pose or up in the air or whatever like that, and just say something really positive. So come up with an affirmation that works for you. And so from there I turned that into like, I might stand on one foot. Standing one foot's a great way to shift your mind back into your right brain as well. So because it makes your brain have to think. I don't know how it works actually, but it makes your brain have to think from the other side. Oh. So standing on one foot.
Does like it matter doing yoga. Which foot?
No, it doesn't matter which foot. Yeah. Okay. Someone else might know more about that. But for me, all I know is that if you stand on one foot, your brain has to focus on balancing. So it kind of switches off other things around you. So by balancing on one foot, I used to do a yoga tree pose, and just put my hands to my chest. And maybe I'd say something to myself, you know, my reminder to myself. I'm just trying to remember what my old one was, but I think it was, I am full of love. I am a role model. So when it was my kids that were stressing me out, I would just kind of bring myself back in and just remember I love them, no matter how crazy they're driving me at the time. I love them and that I'm a role model, so I need to behave, you know, the way that I want them to see and learn how to behave. So it was a great way for me to tune back in. I also teach a lot of my clients, you know, that maybe do work in offices and things like that where they can't just stand up and do a yoga pose, just to come up with like a finger tapping they might do. So obviously people can't see me, but I'm tapping my thumb and my pointer finger, I think it is, or any of the fingers really together, where they can sort of like just every time they want to zone back into themselves, they could do something like just wipe their hand down over their face or tap their fingers together, something that isn't so obvious in a public space, but that is a reminder to themselves to be calm. And we do that by anchoring that. So we've got to try and do that sort of behavior in a calmer state. So when we're feeling relaxed, we start tapping the fingers together or start doing the motion that we want to do. And then when we do get into the stressful situation, then that helps remind us to tap back in and to be still again. So you've got, with those sort of anchors, I like to recharge them. So whenever I'm feeling relaxed, I will do my anchor. And then that way, when I'm in a stressful situation, then that anchor will help bring me back to being more relaxed. So that's a good one. And obviously the mindfulness, I talk about mindfulness a lot because, and I don't know about in Canada, but I know for a while there, everyone was talking about mindfulness and it became a bit of a buzzword. And I think people were like, whatever, I don't even know what that is. That sounds woo-woo or whatever. For me, like you've got to create your own mindfulness. So things that work for you. So like looking at the steam in my cup of coffee or tea was a great thing for me. It was like something really obvious. It's just tuning into the present. So whatever mindfulness looks like you, it's making you tune into the present and just be there and hear the sounds and feel the feels and smell the smells, then that's, you know, that's all you need. And it's using all of those senses. So whether it's auditory, visual, kinesthetic, olfactory, can't think, gustatory, so even your mouth. So maybe it's putting a piece of chocolate in your mouth. That might be something that feels good. Or having a drink of, yeah, chocolate. Yeah, I love chocolate. I haven't eaten it for a month now and I'm missing it. on a detox. Or it could be, you know, a piece of fruit, even anything that when you put it on your tongue and you actually enjoy the taste of it and you really sense that taste, which funnily enough, when you cut out sugar like I have for the last month, an apple all of a sudden becomes so sweet, unbelievably sweet. It's crazy. So yeah, it's just really being present and enjoying the tastes, smells, sounds around you. So that's, what have I said, three different things there. I think the other thing that I found a lot with mums particularly is giving yourself permission to take care of yourself. So for me, I mean, I know even some days still I find it hard to do that, but self-love is so important. And, you know, particularly as women, we are the nurturers. We do throw everything, all of our energy into other people. So to be able to tap back into yourself is critical for you to be able to do your role as a parent to the best of your ability. And I think we all know that deep down, but sort of building the habit of it each day is really key. So I did a free program recently, which was 30 days. I wrote an ebook first, and then a few people asked me for more support. So it was basically 30 days to self-love. So each day I had a different way of somebody to tap into themselves and to do something for self-love. And, you know, different days were, yeah, journaling, mindfulness, gratitude, exercise, you know, the list went on, affirmations, you know, all that sort of stuff. So and it was, and then I ran the Facebook group, which has each day people can tune in and I just explain the topic a bit more. So that was something I really enjoyed doing, because for me, it actually also helped me each day make sure I was showing up and doing the thing for myself as well, because I fall off all the time. Like I don't always stick to my own rules either. So yeah, really important just to build that habit. So to create that space for yourself each day. And eventually it just becomes second nature then, like mindfulness does become second nature.
Mm.
Yeah.
So when people come to you, what are some of the most common things that you work with people for as a lifestyle coach?
Yeah. So I mostly work with women and mums. So I can speak to that audience. So I get a lot of women coming to me, especially the mums who have trying to work out their life purpose. Also probably dealing with some sort of overwhelm. But generally, they've hit their point of satiation, that word again, my favorite word, where they're just, the pain of things that are going on in their life is worse than the, what's the word I was using before? Of the discomfort. Of the discomfort of actually dealing with the issues. Mm. So, so generally, yeah, it's overwhelm, it's lost themselves, it's relationship issues. What else? Generally health. I get quite a few women coming to me with looking for weight loss. They've tried everything. And I think the thing with most weight loss programs out there or products is that they are focusing on just, I suppose, what you're consuming, but they're not focusing on the deep-rooted issues that are causing the symptoms. So most of the things that people come to me with are their symptoms, and it's my job to find the root cause so that we can create the awareness of it, then make a plan to get to where they want to be. So yeah, unearthing that root cause, which is funny because in my corporate world, there's a couple of things that cross over sometimes. So I did a lot of work in quality assurance, where you do a lot of work looking for the root cause of any business process issue or product issue that happens throughout the end-to-end supply chain of the business. So I did a lot of work looking for root causes in my corporate world. So it's funny, I just realized that connection there. It's funny occasionally how those skills can overlap, but yeah, no, it's helping individuals unearth deep down what's been going on that's probably been a pattern throughout their entire life, and helping them then, like I said, create that awareness, because awareness is key. The first thing you need to do any change is to be aware of what you need to change. So a lot of them will come to me and say, you know, I've got this problem, and I'll say, okay, well, so what's your goal? What's stopping you, and where do you want to be? And then we just delve into the what's stopping them down to the point of the root cause. And then we can say, okay, so we can clear all those emotions, and we can clear all the blockages that are in your way. And once that's been cleared for them, then the path ahead is clear. And so then we can start to put the goals into place for them to achieve what they want to achieve, because your conscious mind might be your goal setter, but your subconscious mind is actually the goal getter. So if you can consciously say, I'm going to get up every day at 5 a.m. But if your subconscious mind is trying to self-sabotage, or doesn't believe you can, doesn't believe you're worthy, all those sorts of things will come up, and you won't be able to achieve your goal. So it's about clearing all those subconscious blockages so that you can just make conscious decisions and be fully in alignment with yourself and go after your goals. So for me, that's what it's empowering people to live the life that they want, living a life by design, I call it.
Amazing. I really, that's profound about the subconscious and the conscious. And
yes,
that's quite profound.
And most people, unless they've done work on it, are living out of alignment. So alignment to me is that basically that your conscious decisions and the way you're living is fully in alignment with your soul or your subconscious. So for that to happen, you do need to do work. Like it's not something that most people are born with, unless you've had like perfect parents that knew a lot about you know, being in alignment, that have raised you that way. Even then, life comes in. We all the biggest thing with, you know, with a lot of the people I see is, you know, by the time they hit their 20s or 30s, they've had a whole, you know, four decades of experiences that have shaped them into who they are now. Because all of our, the way we think, the way we behave is all based on everything from our past experiences. So you need to sometimes break those habits, break those patterns that we've developed over the years, so that you can actually take the steps that you need to go forward. Because a lot of the patterns we have are not serving us. They're there to have protected us from where we might have been hurt in the past. So you can imagine if you're trying to go off down a path like start your own side hustle business, or I don't know, fix your health problems that you've had your whole life, you know, and you keep doing the same things you've always done, you know, and people call that stupidity. I don't think it's stupidity. I think it's just people don't know any better, and people could consciously be making the decisions and thinking, well, but I want to do better. I'm trying to do this and I'm trying to do that. But the subconscious isn't in alignment, and subconscious is still there, reminding you that, you know, saying things in your ear, that auditory digital, so that that voice in our head, our inner critic, is the thing that holds us back, because that's our subconscious saying, oh, don't do that, or you know you're not very good at that, you know, you're not worthy of being successful, or you're not good enough for that person, or you're not, you know, all of those things that voice that comes up for us. That's what tends to hold people back. So being able to quiet that voice allows you to then be able to see what you want to what you want and actually go for it, rather than letting all that fear, all the hurt from the past, or all the frustration that you might have, all of those negative emotions holding you back from where you want to go. So we do a lot of work on that, and that's what neuro-linguistic programming is all about, and hypnotherapy. You know, it's all that deeper subconscious work to kind of clear those things that we don't even realize are there. It's all that stuff we don't know about ourselves. So it's, yeah, really important to get that awareness.
And how long, you know, obviously everyone is different. Do you have an on average, like, time that you might work with somebody on those particular subconscious items when someone might be able to see, feel like some results?
Yeah. So for me, the program I offer is 6 weeks because I won't do it in any less. I've tried, and I know a lot of my colleagues that have been trained by, in neuro-linguistic programming have tried to. If you are working on deep-rooted issues, you need at least 6 sessions. You can try and do it, like you can do it in a method where you do it over 2 days, but I find you get more benefits by spreading out sessions so that between each session you've got time to digest and integrate what you've learned about yourself and really just feel the feels. What I would say is that like doing something like a 6 week program is basically like a kickstart. What it does is when you do something like neuro-linguistic programming is you basically clear a lot of your stuff that you've had to date, which allows you that clean slate to sort of move forward. But there'll be things that come up. It's like an onion. We've all got layers. So I think to tell anybody that journey has like a finale would be setting you up for disappointment, because I know I've been on this journey for the best part of 2 decades, and I've had some profound growth this year. Like I said, whenever something new comes up in your life, like for me last year, it was all about setting up my new business. And so that brought up so much for me, things that I didn't realize were there, because as soon as you have new challenges in your life and new life experiences, different things are going to come up for you. So most of the NLP practitioners that I know like a tune-up each year, but really that first time you do neuro-linguistic programming, you're basically clearing a lot of the stuff from the past. So I've seen changes in people after the first session. Because we clear some of the core negative emotions for them, and they automatically walk out lighter. It's amazing. The main emotions we work with are anger, sadness, fear, hurt, and guilt. And it's amazing, once you get rid of anger, then you'll see that sadness might start to bubble up, and once you get rid of sadness, then you can move through, and just the change is immediate. That sort of, if I can imagine, like a lot of people talk about having baggage, and how heavy a bag is, like on your shoulder. I remember it, really clearly, because I used to backpack a lot. But like, if you can just feel that, like that heaviness then being lifted off your shoulders, and that feeling of just lightness. And the thing I notice is a change around people's faces, like all the muscles in the face. Funnily enough, it's probably been the like sort of the thing I notice most in somebody when they've left me, or like when they're leaving after a session, is to see that the muscles around the eyes and around the face are just so much more relaxed. Like all that sort of tension that we don't realize we're carrying, a lot of that is like immediately taken away, which is just profound. Which is why when I discovered NLP, I was like, I have to do more with this. I have to help other people with it, because I tried a lot of things before that, and for me, this was just profoundly different to anything I'd ever tried. And it's got years and years of proof supporting it too. So for me, that's a little bit more critical, and maybe a little bit what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, I've always sort of been open to anything woo-woo, but anybody that thinks it might be woo-woo, it's absolutely not. It's actually scientific. It's all neuroscience. Been proven of decades and decades of people working with ex-militants who have got PTSD, people with anxiety and depression and severe traumas. These processes have been used to work with those people for decades now, and help see them be able to clear themselves, like totally be a non-PTS sufferer and move forward with their lives, which is just beautiful. So yeah, so I'm really passionate about using that. And obviously I don't see as many PTSD clients, with working with mums, but to a degree, all of our past trauma causes some sort of post-traumatic stress. So I think almost every human on the planet has some version of PTS, some much smaller and others obviously much more severe and more serious. So I think I treat everybody's traumas as potential causes of PTS, because they all are to a degree. They've shaped our lives. They've shaped how we feel and how we believe and how we think on a day-to-day basis. So to me, if you want to make change, you need to break through those, and you need to be able to leave that stuff behind. and move forward with a sort of like a clean slate or a new positive belief that you can.
And is this something that can be done by distance or does it need to be in person? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I see all my clients via Zoom. I've only seen one or two in person actually.
Oh, interesting.
Because yeah, I work with people all over Australia. I haven't done too many international people at this point, just because of time zones. I've had a couple of inquiries, but trying to find the time is a tricky one. Mm-hmm. You can do it anywhere, really. Mm-hmm. So same with hypnotherapy. Hypnotherapy is a funny one. Like a lot of people, when I first said I was off to study hypnotherapy, and to be honest, I didn't really know what I was getting myself into when I first went off and did my hypnotherapy master practitioner course either. But it's really just meditation, hypnotherapy. And people think it's just some magic trick, but it's really just really deep meditation with intentions to make subconscious change. So very relaxing, beautiful experience to be hypnotized. And just to, you know, myth bust for people, when you hypnotize, you actually are fully in control of everything you're doing. So it's not like what you see on TV. On TV, that they're people, the kind of people that go on TV to be hypnotized are the kind of people that are want to do silly things in front of other people, you know. So if you, you know, you come into into a session with me with hypnosis or with, you know, anybody that's actually a hypnotherapist versus a what do they call themselves, a hypnotist. You know, like a stage hypnotist. A hypnotherapist is there to use hypnotherapy in a therapeutic sense. So it's a relaxing meditative process versus being like a jump up and moo like a cow sort of, you know, that type of thing. It's nothing like that. So, yeah.
Is there anything else that you feel called to share? So this space is all about, you know, nourishing the sanctuary within and coming to this space of self-love and just prioritizing self. Is there anything else that you feel called to share in this space?
The only thing that came to my mind then was health. So I think you do a great job talking about self-love in everything I've seen you do, and I think we've covered it a little bit here, but people's health is something that I'm really passionate about. So to me, your health is your wealth. If you are not healthy, then you are not able to live the best life you can live. So for me, one of the first things I tackle with all of my clients is focusing in on their health. So what are they eating? You know, like what are they breathing? Like, you know, what's the air quality like in their house? What you know, kind of toxins and things like that are they exposed to on a daily basis? And really just trying to hone in on the things that they can control in their space and how they can make their space healthier, their life healthier, and of course their mind healthier. But for me, it's the nutrition factor, because a lot of the food we eat in modern society that people think is healthy is actually not. And there's the food industry has a, you know, really has a lot to has a lot to be said. There's a lot to be said for the food industry, or no, there's a lot to, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but there's basically the food industry to me is responsible for a lot of ill health in the world, but also the pharmaceutical industry. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but you know, there's a lot of push towards people to be taking pills for everything these days. And sure, if you've got an acute condition, then that's obviously important. But if you've got a chronic long-term problem, then there's no pill that resolves that. It's really is finding that equilibrium in your body, like finding that optimum health inside your body. And your body knows what that optimum health is. We've all got a blueprint for perfect health within us. So I think people need the knowledge to be able to make the right choices, to eat the right foods, to take care of their body. So things like sugar, you know, is highly addictive. I know because I've struggled to avoid sugar most of my life as well, and I'm very aware of sugar. So, you know, alcohol, I don't know that many people that smoke these days, but there are definitely people that still do, you know, all of those things. But It's the toxic load we put on our bodies. So people think, I eat a lot of vegetables. Well, a lot of vegetables, unless they're organically grown, have a lot of pesticides on them. So, and those pesticides actually are total hormone disruptors in our body. So for women that are suffering from, things like endometriosis or hormone balance issues, things like that, a lot of that is just the toxic load on our system that is causing all these other issues to come out. So, cancer, basically anything, any sort of disease in the body is caused by inflammation. And that natural state of inflammation that we all live in these days because of our environment and the foods that we're eating and the pesticides in the food chain and the chemicals in our houses, the pollution in the air conditioning in offices, whatever it might be, all of those things contribute. So one thing in itself might not be bad for you. So if you eat sugar each day, that's not going to kill you, but a combination of all of those things together is what makes us chronically ill as a population. So I think increasing that awareness about, eating that better diet, removing those chemicals from your life, considering, your method of transport or your, where you live, whether if you live in a smoggy city, maybe considering trying to move a bit further away from the city or, all of those lifestyle decisions that are actually our choice that we can make to live a healthier and better life. I'd love to see a change across the world in people living healthier. Our morbidity rates are just increasing. So we might be living longer, but we're not living healthier. And they've predicted that this next generation of children is actually going to be the first generation that doesn't outlive their parents due to morbidity. So obesity, ill health, what else comes up with all of that? Diabetes. And of course, from diabetes, people think, oh yeah, diabetes is one thing, but diabetes actually then causes a whole bunch of other conditions to appear after time in your body as well. So if you can avoid getting diabetes in the first place, then it's much better than trying to treat type 2 diabetes once you get it. Mm. But all illness, like I said, it's all from inflammation. So even for me, like a little example, I used to have pain in my feet. After having babies and, your feet do change, and I kind of just put it down to that. And then after some time, I made some changes in my diet, changes in my lifestyle. Again, just cutting back on sugar. As a mum, I was just living off sugar basically for a while there. I eat a pretty healthy diet compared to probably the majority of the population of the world. But, lots of fruit and vegetables and that sort of thing. But my toxic load was still obviously high enough that my feet were, and a lot of people get things like rheumatoid arthritis, even just aches and pains in the joints, like fibromyalgia. A lot of that is just general toxic load. If you can lower your inflammation and lower your toxic load, then a lot of those things just disappear. So I did, years ago, I had fibromyalgia. I cleared that up through changing my diet. And my feet aching after having the kids. I went to podiatrists and all that sort of stuff, and everyone was saying, oh, it's mechanical. Once I clean my diet up, my feet pain went away. So, I know all the times that I'm feeling the most inflamed is when all these sort of symptoms come to the surface. If you've got, eczema, it's something going on in your gut. If you've got acne, it's your gut. A lot of people put all these harsh chemicals and creams on their faces to try and remove their skin conditions. It's all happening in the gut. The gut is your immune system. The gut is where all of, like, your microbiome in your gut is where all of that great, illness-fighting, bacteria-fighting stuff is all supposed to be happening. And if you've got anything coming up in your skin, it's because there's something going on in your gut. So, like liver, a lot of people get rosacea and things on their face. That's all from your liver. So things that, if you put toxins into your liver, things like alcohol, sugar, what else? I can't think right now, but basically, to detoxify your gut and your liver, you need to be eating like fresh fruit and vegetables, a lot more of it than what people are eating, particularly vegetables, leafy green vegetables and all that sort of thing. So, and buying organic where you can, like I'm lucky around here, we got a lot of farmers. So I get a box delivered at the moment and it's beautiful, like having, farm fresh, spray free vegetables. And yeah, they don't last as long as the store-bought vegetables sometimes. Or sometimes they actually last longer because they're fresher and they haven't been sprayed with stuff. But they may not come and they may not be perfect shapes and they may not be shiny, but they're actually much better for you. But yeah, so I think it's just looking at those alternatives, and that's what I'm passionate about with people's lifestyles, is helping them find that alignment with self for their, you know, for their entire life, including their health, because that's what's going to keep them alive at the end of the day. Without your health, you've got nothing. So yeah, wow. That's probably the only thing I wanted to add.
Truly lifestyle coach, like from like touching on just like such a vast number of topics. That is amazing. I want to thank you so much for just sharing this wealth of knowledge here in this space. I really, really appreciate your time and your wisdom.
Oh, thank you, Tara. I appreciate so much you having me on here.
I am amazed at how many different facets of life Emma can speak to. It is truly a gift to learn from her. Her passion for coaching and mentoring women to liberate themselves from limiting thoughts and patterns is evident. And the powerful results can be seen in Emma's own lived experience. Make sure that you go and check her out on social media. She provides so much guidance in her posts. And let me know, how are you enjoying these episodes so far? Do you have someone who you want to hear in this space, or a question that you are looking to have answered? Please connect with me on social media. And join the Your Hearth at Home private Facebook community to connect further with listeners from all around the world, as well as your featured guests. All of the links are in the show notes. I am sending you so much love, and I will see you next week.